All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Friday, February 3rd. I am Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we are going to be taking a deep look, hard look at a full slate of
deep
NBA action.
Hard look.
Oh boy, starting off good. Of NBA action for FanDuel and DraftKings. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Here to help you get started, keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. You can head over to the site, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system. That's powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab that calculates optimal lineups for those sites. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Includes all projections for all sports that we're doing in whatever seasons are going on right now. So we have NHL projections up there as well. MLB coming closer down the pike than I care to imagine, but that'll all be included under the same package. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and you are all set to go. We got a lot of games here tonight. I think there's 10 or 11 games on the docket for a Friday, full Friday in the NBA. Some outstanding injury news pieces that we'll get to. We'll kind of roll through these game by game, taking a look at where some of the value is. I think actually for a big slate, the value is pretty concentrated, all things considered, and that's what happens when you have some of the worst defensive teams in the league playing. So we'll get to that as we go. All right, let's start. Do you have any quick thoughts before we go?
Or
you,
no.
You have no. He's not the best in the business for nothing, folks. Get him on there. Get him on here to provide all the color.
I'm curious about your outstanding injury news. Like, there's some really, really good injury news that we have so far.
It's absolutely outstanding.
It's out of this world. There's some outstanding injury news.
We'll get to it. The first piece of outstanding injury news is for the Toronto and Orlando game. So, DeMar DeRozan didn't play. They ruled him out. Really quickly ruled him out at the beginning of the week for Tuesday and Wednesday's game. And I say quickly is like, usually you don't see a team just say, he's going to be out for the next two games for sure.
Well, some teams do that more quickly. When the Raptors do it, it's something serious because they like to dangle it like a carrot over your head right up to lock.
Oh, they are kind of the worst in that respect. There's certain teams we've gotten used to, just the flow of information is worse than others. And it used to be that it was the Spurs, you'd say like, oh, he's going to get popped. And for the most part, they've been pretty good with information. They had a sneaky little Davis Bertans is going to start late last night. But for the most part, they've been pretty good about releasing information. The Toronto is not the case. They know what their plan is, and they're just like, we're just going to withhold, man. We're just withholding kind of friend. They're just not going to tell you what it's going to be. So I'm not sure. If I were to guess, I would say DeRozan doesn't play tonight just because he was like in a walking boot, which sounds bad. He was really quickly ruled out last time. If he doesn't play, at this point for you, is Lowry just too expensive at this point? I mean, we have usage bumps in there for him and minutes upgrades, and we have him at 40 minutes right now. So is it just the point where at 9,500 against Orlando, he's just too expensive to play? I don't know. What are your thoughts on Lowry?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it's really interesting time in DFS right now because while they're goofing around with the swaggy slate and the switcheroo slate.
Don't even get me started on those
actually
things.
The fundamentals of DFS are changing a little bit because I can't recall a time since we've been doing this. And, this is 4 years of being in the business now where like these kind of like upper middle tier guys just like have a couple good weeks and all of a sudden they're 10,000. Like, I just don't remember anything like this from the past. I think they're overcorrecting quite a bit for matchup and opportunity. And it just makes it so there's this whole class of players now. Lowry's one, John Wall's creeping up in this territory, Isaiah Thomas to some degree. Like, there's just this whole class of players, Nikola Jokic, whose price is just going up by 2,000 in a couple of weeks. It's just totally unprecedented. And it's changed the game quite dramatically. And yeah, I think Lowry is smack in that category of guys that you can play as many minutes as he wants. He's by and large just not a $9,600 player.
No, I think I'm with you there. The price has exceeded what you can reasonably expect from him at this point, even with a decent matchup against Orlando. And this is assuming DeRozan doesn't play. I don't think I use this terminology a lot, but you're not getting away with anything on Lowry anymore. Just because he just had this run of high usage, high minutes, and he's not a $9,500 player. Norman Powell, on the other hand, he's still coming. Actually, I take that back. He's up to 5,100 on FanDuel as well. So that price has crept up. Where if he were to start for DeRozan, we've seen him, become a bigger part of the offense. When DeRozan's not there, his minutes are pretty high. But that price has come up to probably what's a reasonably fair price for him as well. he's kind of just a guy. Like, he's not a particular, he's an okay player. He's not a particularly good fantasy player at 5,100. So, I mean, when he was 3,500 or 4,000, it was a different story. But so even if DeRozan was ruled out, I'm just not sure we need to jam in these Toronto guys. I don't mind Damari Carroll, actually. He's been playing some big minutes. His price hasn't come up too much. He's only 4,000 on FanDuel. That's a little bit of a different story. He gets a usage bump. He actually gets a nice rebounding bump as well when DeRozan isn't around. So I think Carroll is like the one guy at his current price point you can consider. And it's actually maybe even close, even if DeRozan does play. So he's actually the one guy I'm willing to take a look at. Now, on the Orlando side of the ball, do you trust... So the last, I think, three of the last four games, Orlando has played close games. And they finally figured out that we should just keep our best offensive players on the court for as long as possible. So it's been a dawning realization in the Magic front office and in the coaching staff to say, hey, you know who's like pretty good at scoring? Vucevic. Who knew? You know, like I wasn't aware until right now. Do you trust that they've...
Random.
That's totally random, man. Like, it's like, I didn't see this one coming at all. Do you think that at this point with these guys, Vuce, Ibaka, I mean, to some degree, Payton, are there, I guess Aaron Gordon, though, he doesn't fall totally in that safe category. Are there minutes safe enough now? Do you think that the Magic have kind of figured it out and say, like, we're just going to be playing these guys and this is, we're going to roll with the starters and, you know, it's either going to work or it's not, but these are the guys who are going to play.
Yeah, at least for now. It's tough to say, you know, predict into the future with these guys because they've been so unpredictable just organizationally for so long. But yeah, I mean, it seems like they've been trying to do this, right? Like, they've been working towards trying to figure out more reasonable rotations. Again, maybe someone figured out that their good players were actually good and that you can't just throw a temper tantrum every time someone starts off 1-for-7 from the field or whatever. So yeah, I think that they're coming around to some degree. I actually think this this matchup tonight is a little bit more interesting than normal as well. DeRozan is a really weird player to be out of the game because while he's not a defensive stalwart, he just slows down the game so dramatically. Like, yeah. If you watch a lot of DeRozan possessions, it looks like someone dribbles the ball up the court, they give it to DeRozan, and he does like 17 moves, gets into the lane, and then shoots. And that's actually a reasonably effective offensive possession, so I can't fault Toronto there, but it just loosens everything up a lot. And so that's actually why I like Carroll a little bit more. And it's why I just like everyone in this game a little bit more than normal, simply because, and you know, maybe it's not a cash gameplay, but simply more than normal, it's just because DeRozan's not going to be out there just bouncing the ball up and down 15 times every possession.
Now, that's a great point. That is an interesting pacing point because that you just pretty much described all of their offensive possessions with him. So, and that's not what they're doing.
It's incredible to watch. It just looks totally different than every other team, as far as I can tell.
He's actually one of the few guys that can actually like provide a mid-range game that doesn't just totally make you pull your hair out and want to kill yourself, and they can actually be a good team with it. Like, there's very few guys that can do that, but he is actually one of them that sort of shoes what the normal NBA is doing at this point. But yeah, anyway, I do like the Toronto guys. I like Ibaka. I do like Vuce. I'm not so interested, not as much interested in Elfrid Payton. I wish that if we could reasonably expect Fournier to creep back up to like sort of old Fournier 35, 36 minutes, he'd be a really, really solid play. Though even though when he got into the starting lineup last game, that really wasn't the case. So we're probably going to be a day late on Fournier. You know what I mean? Like just because
there, be a day late on him for sure.
Yeah. There will be a game where he plays 35 or 36 minutes, and I'm just not going to go out on a limb and guess that's going to be the one.
Maybe on a short slate. No reason to do it on a 9-game slate here.
No. And not a 5,000 either on FanDuel. The game that I ran out of new and creative ways. Well, creative, I'm putting in quotes. I ran out of new ways to write up the Pacers guys last night. I just couldn't think of new and like interesting ways to rephrase that.
To
Brooklyn
disparage
is...
Brooklyn.
Basically. Yeah, exactly. Like, so, the Pacers have probably what will end up being their highest implied total of the season. They're right around like 113, 114 points. It makes sense. Brooklyn's fast. They're bad. Teague, George, Turner, and probably even Thad Young, are they all in play for cash tonight?
Absolutely. I think it's a worthwhile moment to bring up the last time I recommended Miles Turner against Brooklyn and asked people to look out for a transcendent performance, and then you went behind my back on Twitter with some rando and were telling him how that I don't speak for everybody and whatnot. And then Miles Turner went out there and got 25 and 15. So all of this to say, not relevant really of anything today, but just to say, F you, buddy. Thanks for turning on me that last time around. I will say, yeah, they're all fantastic plays. I mean, the nice thing about Indiana, yeah, I was going to call them Indianapolis for
sure. Yeah, I do that all the time too. I get confused. I go like weird sports, weird geographic sports switches. Yeah, I do. So don't worry about that. I do the same thing.
Well, thanks, bud. I appreciate you trying to suck up to me after going behind my back with that random Twitter guy. the thing about Indiana that I like quite a bit, as compared to some matchups against Brooklyn, because sometimes you're like, oh, well, X and Y team is just going to destroy them, right? But in a game with just a 7-point spread against Brooklyn, that rates to be closer than usual for them. And so I think Indiana gets even an additional boost above, say, if like the Warriors or Cavs or whoever else was going to play them. So, I like all those Indiana guys quite a lot. I think you're probably going to want to play four Pacers even on a night with so many teams. And I think it's probably just correct.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard. I mean, the Paul George's price has come up. He was like 75 or 7,300 last week, and he's back up to 8,700. So when you're talking about those quick price corrections based on some performance and matchup, like that's another example that we've seen just that happened specifically with him. And he's actually, his situation hasn't changed so much except that he's just shooting a ton in the short term. So you're getting, he's a good deal. He's not a must play at 8,700. He's a very, very good play at 8,700. There are some other small forward values here tonight, but Teague has gone the other way. Like that price hasn't moved too much. So
yeah, that's insane.
Teague,
that's a terrific price on
him. Yeah, Teague and Turner's the same way at only 6,700. So if I were to just choose, if I had to choose two of them, let's say two or three, I would probably go Teague and Turner first, just because George, it appears, has gotten the biggest price correction. Brooklyn. Look, I mean,
George has sustained a $9,000 price in the past for stretches. I mean, and I'll throw Thad Young into this group too. It's another guy you can consider. But yeah, you're probably right. I mean, it's a wide enough slate that maybe you don't get all four.
I'm a little worried about that. The only reason I worry about Thad Young is when you look at his minutes over the last five games, he's really struggled to top 30 or 31 minutes. And at 5,500, he's a good offensive player. You're getting close to worrying about his upside if he's just going to play 28 or 29 minutes, which has been the case. And so that's my only concern. I do think people will play him anyway because they'll see 5,500 and just not think that that's – they won't worry about that price, right? And so I think there could be like a mental factor to that as well. And as always, power forward is just a very difficult spot to roster, really just anybody. Going the other way, Brooklyn – if you have a good way to predict Brooklyn's minutes, I would love to hear it. You can send me an email, doug@dfsr.com. I would love to hear it. If you can run a five-game audit with a high correlation on their minutes, you're hired. So,
since I'm here on the podcast, can I just tell you, or do I have to email you also?
You can email me. Yeah.
You were talking to other people. I'm sorry, because I thought it was you and I talking. in terms of predicting Brooklyn's minutes, the thing is that you simply can't. And they also, it's not like they're just like dripping with these guys. Like, it's not like when we had like Nikola Jokic, when we were like, ooh, if we could just get 30 minutes a game out of him. Like, Brooklyn, they're unpredictable and their players are bad. So that kind of double dipping there leads me to believe that you're probably not going to play anyone. There's some interesting GPP upside. Like, Trevor Booker randomly stops playing 16 minutes and plays 30 like he did 2 weeks ago, because who knows? Then maybe he could go off. But yeah, you're not going to play any of these guys in your cash games.
Yeah, like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson played 30 minutes last game. If I knew that was going to be the new norm for him, then 4,000 for him on FanDuel is a good price. Indiana's not a good defensive team. Like, you can exploit Indiana in DFS. They play a little quicker than they have in the past. They've populated their team mostly with offensive first guys, except for George, only because he is actually a defender. Really, the rest of their guys are below average defenders as a whole. So I would love to play these Brooklyn guys. Like, I would love for them to just come out, Kenny Atkinson to just come out and be like, here it is, Lopez 31, Jefferson 30, Bogdanovich 30. We're just going to do it tonight. We're finally going to pick five. But they're just not going to, and that's the problem with them. You just can't. You're rolling the dice always on who the flavor of the night is for those guys. Absolutely. And they'll randomly sit guys. That's the only actually thing you can get away with. If they randomly just sit a guy or two, and you can make some maybe reasonable judgments based on that, but otherwise it's a complete and total dice roll. Another 7:30 game here. Minnesota goes to Detroit. We talked about Minnesota 2 days ago in terms of how when you get a team like them that's just amazingly consistent with their minutes, so the opposite of some of the other teams we've mentioned already, they're amazingly consistent with their minutes under Tibbs. When that happens, you're just going to get sustained sort of like you're going to get sustained performances in and around a correct price, and that has basically been the case with them. Detroit is not a great team to face up against in DFS. Is there anything you like on either side of the ball in this game?
Yeah, not particularly. I mean, Wiggins has been a guy who's been getting a lot of play recently, and it's understandable. I think for cash games, people kind of gravitate towards safety. One of the things we're noticing recently, and you know, possibly just anecdotally, this has nothing to do with these teams directly, but one of the things we're noticing anecdotally is that I think at this point, people seem to overcorrect for safety on some level, right? Like, you know, I'll talk about Andre Drummond, who I think is a good play again tonight.
Yes.
When we rolled Andre Drummond out a couple of nights ago, it was just a nonstop wave of concern for Mark Chatters. You know, whoa, Drummond, what, really? Drummond, Drummond? Mm-hmm. You know, they just couldn't help themselves dripping with Drummond concerns. And, you know, it was a good matchup with Boston. The Al Horford news wasn't quite out yet. And, you know, of course, Drummond, we couldn't have predicted this, but he goes out and scores 66 fantasy points. And the thing with Drummond was, you know, it's not that he's a bad play when he gets his minutes, and that's the case again tonight. It's that sometimes he gets in foul trouble or sometimes he can't play in the end of games, and there's going to be some variance there. And so, you know, I'm calling Drummond a good play again tonight, recognizing that the price has gone up. But the guy has 20-plus rebound upside. Right. He's not, you know, in a world where Kyle Lowry is almost 10,000, like, we're looking at Drummond in a totally different way now. And so, yeah, I don't think you want to slam dunk him necessarily, but I just want to caution people against overcorrecting for safety, because you can do it to some level. You can do it as, and you should do it probably as a tiebreaker, but you don't want to be giving up, you know, 3 points of equity there, 5 points of equity here, because at some point you're just making a bad lineup. So, like, so that's my take there.
I find that to be particularly hard for people to get over when it comes to, and I fall into this trap too. And maybe I'm wrong about this, but I find people get really concerned around this with the center position, right? Like, you hear more of complaints like this when it's like the Drummonds or the Dwight Howards, guys like this of the world, like, where the system will, they're perpetually underpriced because of, like what you said, some of the, these are the guys specifically that can't stay in game sometimes because of foul trouble. It's easier for big men to get in foul trouble, right? It's also, these guys can't shoot free throws. So, like, they kind of have, like, similar concerns. And I think that's where some of this concern comes. Does that make sense? Like, is where some of that concern comes from? I just didn't notice it more about that. Say it again.
It's just no fun at all to play a guy
right.
and have him play 23 minutes, like will happen to Drummond from time to time. Like, that stinks. That's a terrible experience. It's not fun at all. But the thing is, like, yeah, he goes out there and gets you 25 fantasy points. That's going to be very hard to win in that case. But it's just as hard if, you know, some guy who plays 36 minutes a game goes out and gets you 3x on some other price. Right. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know. I think you just got to move past the bad feels when it comes to losing in certain ways. Like, you're going to lose in all manner of ways in DFS, and, you know, just,
I think,
get
that's
comfortable with it.
The single hardest thing for anyone, and I'll include myself in this, to get over, right? To get over the feeling of what it could feel like to have it be a bad play. And then there's certain guys that you can project that feeling more, Drummond being one of them. And that, I think, is the hardest thing for people in DFS. And I'll throw myself in the club too. We have lots of nights where we look at the lineups and we say, oof, you know, like, this is the system's telling us one thing, our brain's telling you the other. And you know, where you have to have the rubber meet the road is who you're going to trust. And it's hard, even for two guys, I think, that are pretty emotionless when it comes to stuff like this. It's still very, very difficult. So anyway, that's a long story.
I think, like, I just want to caution people again against, like, you know, I know it feels better to have LeBron out there on the court if he's going to go out and, you know, whatever, play 38 minutes and have the ball in his hand most of the time. That feels better, but price matters. The reason that DFS is hard is because each guy is assigned a price. And this is DFS 101. I'm not trying to patronize anyone. But the reason DFS is hard is because there's prices involved. Otherwise, everyone would just play LeBron or Harden, et cetera. So, like, I don't know. I just want to – you can't win in this game. Like, one of the most common concerns we hear from our users, like, the people who just play our lineups just win. You know, I can comfortably say – especially for basketball at this point in the season, our basketball system is just winning.
Right.
But not all of our users are winning, because sometimes they'll say things like, man, I'm going to X out Andre Drummond. He's never going to be in my lineups. And then they miss out on 8X. So, you know, long speech over, but just, I would say, just try to pull your emotion out of it and use numbers.
Let's move into the Lakers and the Celtics. Lakers coming off a game last night. D'Angelo Russell was he was what we kind of thought he would be going into last night's game. The only concern with him was he had come back from injury, but then randomly played, I say randomly because it's not what the Lakers do. He played 34 minutes in his first game back, and then he did actually go out and play 31. He was one of the top plays of the night last night. Almost triple doubled, but he did have a bunch of turnovers. Now the Lakers are, they're plus 11, so Celtics are big favorites here, and it's actually one of the higher lines of the night. For the most part, the spreads on these games tonight are pretty close, so it's like the opposite of last night. Last night was, you know, every game was seemed like it was 10 or higher. This is really the only one that's in a double-digit different point spread. With Russell, on the back-to-back, He's been very good. The price hasn't come up a ton. Do you think he's safe in what could be a blowout for on the Lakers side of the ball?
Yeah, I mean, tough to say safe necessarily, but whenever the Lakers are involved. But I think one of the things that we're seeing with Russell is the Lakers acknowledging that they only have a couple of good players on their team, and Russell happens to be one of their good players who's also someone that they're trying to build the future around. So it's really hard to believe that he dips down below 30 minutes a game, at least coming off of two good games. So, yeah, I think you can play him. I mean, I think the thing you like about Boston is, you know, they do have some pretty decent wing defenders, but they do play a fast pace. Vegas likes this as having a reasonable total. And while obviously the Celtics are favored by almost 12 points here, I think that you can suspect that Russell will be out there as long as the Lakers are in the game. And he actually gets the ball in his hands just as much in games where they're behind because he's the main distributor and a reasonable scorer too. So yeah, I think you can play Russell, although I would be pretty skeptical about any of the other Lakers pieces here.
Yeah, Tarik Black did play some minutes last night, even though Julius Randle came back, but he was still sick and only played 6 minutes. And they did play Black, though. That's not something that you can just lock in for minutes-wise because, well, I'm still firmly in the camp that the Lakers are quietly tanking and they're just like not saying it because there's just no reason for them to win. This is why you see these minutes kind of all over the place, and they just they're just not incentivized to really win here. Now, on the Celtics side of the ball, Isaiah Thomas is a guy you mentioned before, is just whose price has just climbed. Like, he's been about as good as you can be in the league lately. Like, he's especially the fourth quarter. I don't call him heroics, but because I think it's a corny term. But it's just like, this is a guy, he gets into the fourth quarter and just like some kind of switch goes off. And I had the fourth quarter numbers in front of me, and I don't have now. His fourth quarter numbers this year are just truly, truly insane. His last three games, he scored 44, 41, and 37 real points. And really kind of crushed this $10,000 FanDuel price. And when I say crushed, I mean saying like hitting 5x or more in something like 6 of the last 7 games. It's also a big spread. And I don't know, it's $10,000 for Isaiah Thomas. At what point are we still getting value on him at this price?
I don't know if you're getting value in the same way that you can't normally get value from anyone in this range. Like, it's just, that's not usually the term you use. You know, the term that I would use in this case is a payoff. And is Isaiah Thomas a good payoff at 10,500? So, you know, normally the way this works is you're going to get a lower points per dollar multiplier overall on your guys over, say, 9,000. But the idea is that you have some outrageous values at 3,500. Some random guy gets a start, and, you know, Damari Carroll's going to play 40 minutes. You find some value somewhere else, and then you can jam Thomas in. Is he a good enough payoff? I mean, he certainly has been recently, right? Like, if you look at the recent game log and the recent plan for the Celtics, it certainly appears as though Thomas is capable of supporting a $10,000 price. I would say that in almost every matchup, I wouldn't be interested in playing him here. And I think the Lakers might be the last bastion of, you know, where we can play him. They're just so bad defensively. You know, playing fast, playing poorly again this season, top 10 matchup for opposing point guards. And with the Celtics favored, I have to think that, you know, is largely because they see Thomas shredding, right, or Vegas sees Thomas shredding the Lakers D. So, yeah, I think you can play him, although I'm not over the moon about it. It's not like, you know, I don't know, like when Kevin Durant would go out and we had Russell Westbrook. It's not like that level of you just have to play this big money guy, but I think you can play this big money guy, and I think a lot of people certainly will.
Yeah, it's interesting to see where his ownership percentages come in. Again, he's with Avery Bradley out, he's played a bunch of minutes, he's taking tons of shots. He's shot over 20 times in the last, taken more than 20 shots in 4 of the last 5 games, and the only one that he didn't was just a massive blowout where they crushed the Magic. So he was on his way to being, he shot 15 times in 25 minutes in that game. So he just, their offense, and I'll be interested to see how much people value that against obviously a Lakers team that they're in that Nets category of just can't play any defense and also want to sprint up and down the court as much as possible. So Thomas is an interesting guy here. Like I said, Avery Bradley, I don't think is going to play tonight, but they've sort of redistributed his minutes to guys like Jaylen Brown, who will play some in the starting lineup, but then they'll bring in, you know, Gerald Green and Rozier off the bench. And so I'm just not, they're not, they don't. No other guy gets a ton of minutes. Crowder sees some run, though his price has come up too. So if you don't need to worry about a blowout scenario, if you're using Vegas to determine your blowout scenarios, on a night like this, you actually probably don't need to take the risk in cash games, just because there are a lot of other options. And that would be the only reason I would also maybe get away from some of those Celtics guys.
That's fair.
Another 8 o'clock game: Houston and Chicago. Houston is coming off a a crushing loss last night. They were killing the Hawks. I think they're up by 20 at some point. I think even going into the fourth quarter, they were going up by 20 or 18. Where I was to the point where, because we played Harden, I was worried. I was like, oh, here we go. Not going to see Harden for the fourth quarter. Blowout and the blowout's on. And then,
whoopsies.
Yep. they just had an epic collapse. Now, part of that was fueled by the Hawks and Tim Hardaway specifically just simply couldn't miss. Like, Hardaway just flipped a switch last night and, in the fourth quarter, and just fueled this crazy comeback for the Rockets. And I'm still kind of in shock that they lost. I'm sure they are too. They're coming now on the back-to-back against Chicago. They have, I believe, the highest implied total of the night, but that's not totally new for them because they're often this way. How do you see a guy like Harden against the Chicago team? It's a little bit of a pace down for him, but you know, Harden is Harden at 12-2 on FanDuel. Is he cash game viable on a big slate?
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, well, I think the Celtics have a slightly higher total tonight, but I think Harden is going to be cash game viable for a number of reasons. First of all, you just know a lot of people are going to play him in a plus matchup against the Bulls, so I think that's, you know, a good place to start there. I wonder, though, like when you look at the Bulls, and I'm curious to get your take on this, their season-long numbers in terms of allowing fantasy points to opposing shooting guards are bad, right? They're a bottom five matchup for opposing shooting guards. Who actually covers Harden in this game from your perspective? Because if it's Butler, I don't think we're too excited. But, you know, Harden's not really a shooting guard anymore either. So
now we have him like a hybrid label. We use some hybrid labeling here to try to determine like...
Oh, I know, inside of our system. But I'm talking about for the average layperson. But yeah, explain why that's important.
Well, it's important because until you can totally drill down to the player-on-player thing, which we are starting to work on, like the player-on-player matchups, and especially the NBA, that is pretty important. You need to sort of... you need to relabel some of these guys to make sure that you're getting the correct, just like the correct multipliers at their position. So the reason you can't just like label a guy like Harden one specific thing is because he's going to draw different defenders from different teams, and they're just going to have different ways that they're going to attack him. So I'm doing a roundabout version to say like you just can't label guys one position really at all. Really across the NBA at this point, there's too many guys switched between positions too much, and rotations vary too much just to be able to pin it down on this. You're going to draw this one specific matchup for this entire game. It's just like isn't the case. So I don't know if I did a perfect job of explaining that, but that's why you just can't like label a guy as one position. So Harden. Yeah, you know, he was great last night. And he was actually if you went into the if you knew the game was going to stay close, his number you would have taken actually the over on like maybe like 80 fantasy points going into the fourth quarter because he was just absolutely crushing. He just didn't do much in the fourth quarter, which is one of the reasons they lost. He is very expensive. I'm not positive, so I don't think I even ever answered your initial question. I don't know who covers him really for the Bulls. I'd be shocked if it was Butler for the whole game. That being said, Jerry and Grant is bad. Like obviously they're not going to start Rondo. He sucks at defense anyway. The Bulls are going to have some matchup problems here with Harden, and that could be the reason that they shifted Butler over to him. Though I'm not confident that that's the route you want to go. The other problem with sticking like a guy like Butler on a guy like Harden is Harden draws so many fouls, even against good defenders, that like you really run into a problem when you stick your best offensive guy, who happens to maybe be your best defensive guy, on him, because you do run a foul trouble risk even with guys like Butler. So I'm giving like a filibustery answer to say I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I noticed that.
But I kind of went on and on and on and on. I'm not sure who covers him. I do think that he's a solid play. Is there anyone else on the Houston side of the ball that you like at all, or is just like some minutes concerns where no one's really playing a ton of minutes for this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you do think Harden's going to draw a tougher matchup in Butler, maybe consider a guy like Patrick Beverley. We're talking big tournaments here, probably. I just don't think this game is quite juicy enough to where you want to go super stack on it necessarily. You know, Ariza is another guy who continues to play minutes, played 37 minutes against Atlanta, was bad, so you're not really
excited.
Well,
he can't shoot at all. He shot 1-for-12 from the field something like that, and I was, again, not let your eyes deceive you. His shots weren't even close. The one he made was close, and I would say the other 11 were not close. And
yeah, I mean it's a new night, so I'm hesitant to be like, well, one bad shooting night where he was in his own head.
It's not one bad shooting night though. But anyway, I'm with you. The minutes there are still.
Nonetheless, my major point here is don't play these guys in cash games probably. But if I think there is a GPP play to be had, if you want to run, like, say maybe like a reason Beverly and just say like, well, maybe Harden, this is one of those nights that he has sometimes where he only has 31 fantasy points. The problem is that he'll get assists on a lot of those plays as right. well, but I think they're both cheap enough and they play enough minutes to where they could provide high upside, but I'm not interested for cash game purposes.
Yeah, well, what do you think about, so you said not get, we don't want to fall too much into the trap of, you know, a bad shooting night here and there, letting it affect us. At what point do you think, so I'm going to use this specific number. Over his last five games, Ariza is shooting 20% from three and 20% from the field. But that's mostly because most of his shots come from three. So he doesn't take a ton of field goal attempts that aren't three pointers. At what point do you actually, would we as a whole, as a projection outfit, start to become concerned that there is just kind of something wrong, because this is sustained bad shooting from him. It's not
sustained. I just don't see it as sustained at all. So Ariza's current field goal percentage for the year is higher than it was 2 years ago. Like, and 0.5 below last year. Like, it just, things cluster. It's very distracting and very hard to stomach when you happen to be playing the guy, especially in the middle of one of these clusters. I think it's completely meaningless, to be honest with you. Like, I think I would need maybe like a month or something. I would need some injury news. I would need some context beyond just, you know, 1-for-12 last night and 0-for-5 the night before that. I just don't. And maybe there's some eyeball test here involved, and, you know, someone smarter than me or more in tune with these sorts of things than me can notice these things better. But I'm not equipped to do that. I acknowledge that my emotions can get the better of me in situations like that. So I would say I'm not worried at all about that.
Interesting. I think that would, if that was the case, then he would probably fall into like that tournament upside kind of guy, because the prices continue to drop on the bad performance.
I think he's a good play. I think he's actively a good play, and he probably won't wind up in our system for cash games, but I don't think that's because he's a bad player.
On the Chicago side of the ball, we have Taj Gibson, I think, will be back tonight, which, you know, without him, there have been some rebounding to go around, but I believe he is going to play. You know, Jimmy Butler is still a guy that is averaging, when the game can stay close, Butler is a guy that can play upwards of 40 minutes. It's the staying close part that has been the problem for the Bulls. At 9,400 against the Rockets, do you think Butler, you know, do you think if the Chicago can keep it close, is Butler a favorite to play like 38, 39 minutes here and actually be a reasonable play at 9,400 on FanDuel?
No, I don't think it matters that much. It's another case where his price, he's actually exactly in that classic guy we talked about earlier, Lowry, Isaiah Thomas on some level, of a guy who's just priced higher than his kind of average production, his baseline production. And Houston doesn't represent that good a matchup. You know, Ariza's not a lockdown defender like maybe he was in the past. He's still reasonable and not a plus matchup for Butler whatsoever. So given, and just an extra layer of the Bulls being a complete mess doesn't help either here. So no, I'm not going to play Butler in cash.
OKC takes on Memphis. Westbrook, actually, I think last game he played Memphis, he was decent. We saw where DraftKings especially had overcorrected on his price. That sort of happened again here. He's only 11.5, which is as bad as low as you're going to get for him on a night-to-night basis. At that point, so 11.5 is, like I said, is significantly less. Last time he played Memphis, he went for 24, 13, and 12 for 65 fantasy points. Do you think that they have overcorrected on the low end of his price? Like, are you getting, let's say that price is 8 or 9% off of, you know, what his average is. Do you think that you are getting an 8 or 9% downgrade on his expectation facing a team like the Grizzlies, or can we, again, because I think last time we played him against Memphis last time, because we saw this as the price correction had gone too far. Do you think that's the case again tonight? I'm mostly speaking about DraftKings.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's cheaper than normal. I think last time, I can't recall offhand, this was almost a month ago now, but I feel like he was under 11 in that contest. I could be wrong there. Westbrook is kind of interesting because he's quietly not been just putting up 60 fantasy points a night quite recently. I also think he's kind of an interesting profile because we talked about guys like Ariza who, talk about their baseline and going into a shooting slump and that sort of thing. Westbrook's particular game, it's so unusual because just no one else handles the ball and shoots and rebounds and assists quite as much as he does in this modern NBA. And so, you know, ever since he started doing this, basically when Durant went down with an injury when they were still on the same team, 2 years ago, I think it was, people asked themselves, like, is this really sustainable? Can he really go out there and basically just be a triple-double machine and, you know, the modern Oscar Robertson? And I'm just not sure he can be. I'm just not sure anyone can sustain that level of energy and production on a night-to-night-to-night-to-night basis. So I do think the price is a little bit better for Memphis. I don't know if it makes him a slam dunk play necessarily, just based on the context of not being quite as good recently. and just some, you know, just some concerns about the matchup. I still think it's okay. Like, I don't think you're going to kill yourself if you have him in there. He's still very, very consistently putting up around 50 fantasy points. But yeah, just not, I don't think it's so cheap that you have to play him, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that's going to be, I think it will end up being close. This one will end up being close, and then it'll also end up being a situation where I think people will, if he were in the lineup, people will not feel great about it because they're staring down that matchup right now. So if you run lineups for us right now, he's actually in the second overall lineup on DraftKings. And he's coming in at 80%, he's coming 80% of all the lineups calculated. That's a pretty high number for his price and just how close he is now. So, you know, we say this a lot when it's that close. And you actually see, it's interesting on DraftKings, at least for our, there's just a lot of guys that are just almost like in every lineup now. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys that are in 80% of the lineups or more. And that's a pretty interesting cluster for this early in the day. And it's not like these guys are all cheap. Like these guys are, their situations are pretty much set. So I'm wondering, actually, famous last words, I'm wondering how much these DraftKings lineups change as the day goes on. It doesn't seem like it's going to be much, and Westbrook looks like he's going to be in there. So that'll be one that we'll take a hard look at as the day goes on. Memphis, on the other way, they get a pace upgrade against OKC here. Conley's been very, very good. We know that Westbrook is not a defensive first point guard. They don't need him to be, and they just can't have him be. Conley's been very good in the short term. I see him as a bargain, maybe Gasol too, and then the rest of the Memphis guys, they just kind of, those two guys play minutes and the rest of them just sort of kind of fall to the wayside or just get locked, you know, lost in rotations at times. So Conley maybe, Gasol maybe, and then kind of nobody else. Denver at 9 o'clock, getting into the 9 o'clock games. Denver is playing Milwaukee. There's no line in the game right now, I would suspect mostly because the not knowing about Jokic playing or not. So we know Gallinari is already out, so that news came out yesterday, so that one is set. But Jokic and Barton are both questionable right now. How do you view a guy like Wilson Chandler? Like, is Wilson Chandler, one, do you suspect he starts? Two, does it matter for you at that point whether Jokic and Barton play or not to determine where Chandler stands with value, or is he kind of just like independent of all the rest of the news?
I don't know if he's completely independent of it, just because, I mean, Gallinari and Jokic and Barton are all just such high usage guys on this team that any one of them going missing obviously creates a ripple effect that flows out throughout the rest of the team. I do think, you know, Chandler's kind of a funny guy too, because he just will straight up disappear on you, just go out there and shoot once or whatever. So I won't say that Chandler feels like a phenomenal play. I do think if he's going to play like 30, and I suspect with Gallinari out, he probably will play like mid 30s minutes on its face. And I think, you know, weighing some of these sort of things probabilistically is challenging, but if you said that, you know, on average one of those players will miss this game, I think that's enough to make Chandler a good play that's occasionally going to really suck and you're going to be grumpy about. So I think he's a solid one.
When you look at his recent game log, it's 14, these are fantasy points, 14 fantasy points, 50 fantasy points, 10 fantasy points, 27 fantasy points, 9 fantasy points. So that's a lot.
Yeah, but this is what I'm talking about. Like, you might be thrilled, you might be devastated. If the truth, as they say, lies somewhere in between, then I think you're probably just reasonably happy. I think we can go back to early January when he was, you know, scoring more in the 37, 39, you know, 25, 32, like in that kind of range. I think that 5X is pretty reasonable here. Again, if you're just combing a 9-game slate and trying to look for the absolute safest place, he's not on the list, but the average production might be high enough that you just go with it anyway.
There's a direct correlation, it looks like, between those, the bad performances and just minutes. Like, he was just playing low 20s, high teens, low 20s minutes. 100%. And if you don't believe that's the case, then you can kind of explain away some of the performance, but not all of it. Like, that is those are some pretty bad games. Also, Moutier is questionable as well. So there's a lot of there's a lot of uncertainty on the Denver side of the ball right now. I'm hoping we have the news before 7 o'clock lock. Like I said, I'd probably be willing to play Chandler no matter what, because the guy that he would fill in for the most is definitely out. So that's kind of where I stand with that. Going the other way.
How about Gary Harris?
Oh, yeah, I wrote up Harris last night. He does see somewhat of a usage bump. He's actually better when Moody. Oh, actually, is he better when Moutier plays? It's one of the situations. Yeah, I think he's better when Moutier plays. Shoot, you know, it was funny. The reason I'm stumbling on that, and the reason I'm not going to pause the podcast, but is because I was asked that question and I did a query on it, and then I just like read the query. It's like when someone says to you like their name is like Karen or Karin, and then you just don't. hear it correctly the first time, and then it's always in your head that you're saying it wrong. Like, right, you know, like, it's like,
shoot. That never happens.
What's that?
Go ahead. That never happens to me, but go ahead.
Okay, well, anyway, for all the people that aren't lying out there, that's how I got with this Harris thing. So actually, I'll look it up after the podcast. I'll put it in the notes. But
Harris, interesting though, because he had three great games in his last six since returning from injury, and three complete abominations. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those things where, which Harris are you going to get? I do think he's also. I think just everyone on this team is helped by these high usage guys being out of the picture, though. So just definitely a guy I'm going to keep on my radar. Certainly, if we get any more news, like if Will Barton's out, I'm going to play Gary Harris, and I might just wind up playing him.
Yeah, Jamal Murray would probably come into the play there too if they were missing some of these like these wing kind of guys. So there's going to be some interesting ways to go with Denver tonight. On the other side of the ball, Milwaukee, they're one of those teams where they're like, okay, well, Giannis is going to play his minutes, and then it's going to be the flavor of the night situation with Jason Kidd, because they've had a couple games where just because you start for Milwaukee doesn't mean you're going to play the most minutes. And that's been the case a couple times in the short term where, you know, Dellavedova started, but then Brogdon played more, or, you know, Thon Maker started at center for reasons kind of unknown. Although some of that might have been like protest issues. I'm not exactly sure why Thon Maker starting. And then Greg Monroe is actually the guy that plays minutes. When you have these guys coming, let me back up. Giannis, I think, is a great play tonight. Denver is just a very, very bad defensive team. I think they're among the worst in the whole league in terms of defensive efficiency. So I do think Giannis represents a pretty great value, all things considered. But how do you view the rest of that Milwaukee team?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those weird situations here where Denver, second worst in the league against point guards, worst in the league against shooting guards. They're a little tougher on big men, but that's when they have their good big players healthy, you know, so like they don't have those guys either. They play a reasonably fast pace. They just have no defensive plan, which I think causes them a lot of problems. There's a lot of confusion among how they're going to rotate on wing players and that sort of thing. So I think Milwaukee's interesting because they're not really known for having a depth of fantasy talent. Especially, you know, when this weirdness is happening with Thon Maker and company. I will say that, you know, if we get starting lineups as we get closer to game time, you know, there's a decent chance there's some value here. Like maybe it's with Matthew Dellavedova or Brogdon, depending on who's starting. But yeah, it's one of those situations where when Denver's playing, we would love to have slightly better fantasy team to oppose them. And we might just wind up with only Giannis. But even that, I think, would be a pretty good takeaway.
Yeah, no, and I like it's like Monroe's a guy. Well, he's, you know, he plays 35 minutes, but then he'll play 23.
Yeah, so
he'll play 17, but then he'll play 29. Like if you, I have him for 27 right now. Could be 6 too high, could be 5 too low. You know, I don't know. Like, like, and when that's he's a great point. He's a per minute beast. Like if he can just play, if I could pencil him in for 28 minutes, I'd probably play him pretty consistently here, but you just can't really do that with this Bucks team, and that's mostly their issue. So thanks a lot, Jason Kidd. 10:30 game, Phoenix and Sacramento. Phoenix, to continue sort of the theme of just because you start doesn't mean you play, and sometimes you start and sometimes you play a lot and sometimes you don't. Like that's where sort of these like Marquise Chris and TJ Warren's fall. It doesn't matter that these guys start, and it doesn't matter if they come off the bench. When it comes to Phoenix, all bets are off the table in terms of who's actually going to be playing on a given night. Even with that, though, Sacramento is just not – they're so slow that I just don't think you're getting great value when you play Sacramento anyway. They're not a good defensive team by any means, one of the worst in the league, bottom five in terms of defense. But their pace is about the slowest in the league. Only, I think
– Yeah, it's amazing how they turn that around.
Well, that's what happens when they're just like, well, here's the ball, Boogie. Run down the shot clock and just do whatever you want. And
go, Boogie.
Right, that's it's like so funny with them. We've said this before. It's kind of a broken – or at least for me, it's a broken record with – this is why – it's hard to play guys against Sacramento for that reason, and it's hard to play anyone else on Sacramento for this reason. Like they just kind of, it all becomes
they're just a dead fantasy team.
Right, it is. It just and it's weird because I still have it in my head that Sacramento is like this fast paced team that lets a ton of points, but it's just really not the case. So I think you see some people playing Boogie tonight. He gets a decent matchup against Tyson Chandler and company for the Suns, who do play fast. He's pretty much the only guy that I would look at in this game, and even that at 11-3. He's very expensive on FanDuel, so I 11-3 for Boogie, or you can pay up for Harden, or down a little bit for Giannis. I'm not sure. That he's a great deal, especially there are some other center values. Final game, Dallas and Portland. Dallas is another one of those slow teams. Do you think is anyone interest you at all when guys play Dallas? Is it kind of just like to quote our friend Cody Sparks, auto X list. When shout out to Cody.
Yeah, I mean, there's teams like this. You know, Dallas is one of them. I think Dallas, Memphis, and Utah are really the teams I target in this group, where like basically no one has a plus matchup when they're against them. Dallas is the best matchup of that lower group in that they have the worst defensive efficiency. Memphis and Utah are not only the slowest teams in the league, but they also happen to play the best on defense when people do get down right there. So things could really get pretty problematic. That's why I'm not very high on Westbrook today. I think Dallas, I'm not psyched about it, but you can make a better case, I guess, than some of the other slow teams, but only if sites price correct. If they don't price correct, then it's just a complete
stay. Yeah, going the other, I'm with you. I pretty much don't want to do it. The Dallas runs that shot clock all the way down. They get into their half court. They're totally incentivized to get into the half court sets.
There's a bunch of old players that are slow or bad.
But they're actually really well coached, so they know what they have, and they just say this is the way we're going to stay in games. Now going the other way, I do like a bunch of these Dallas guys. Portland plays at around a league average pace, maybe a little faster, but they're also a bottom five defensive team this season. Particularly bad against opposing bigs, though I would say they're kind of just bad across the board against every position. Dallas has some injury issues. Darren Williams is questionable. Yogi Ferrell has been a guy who's played a little bit. It looks like Bogut is out. If you let's say Darren Williams independent, what about a guy like Harrison Barnes tonight? Guy's still shooting a ton, even with Dirk back. He's been a really high usage guy for this team, as that seems to be the changing of the guard in terms of what they want to do on offense. Do you see Barnes as a pretty good value tonight?
I do think he's solid. I mean, he's been actually fairly highly owned recently, coming off of a pretty good stretch there of good games against the Knicks, Thunder, reasonable against the Spurs, and then good against Cleveland. Very good against Cleveland on a short slate where a lot of people played him. I think that, you know, he's kind of okay. Like, you can play him. I don't think you're going to be thrilled about it. It's not like if you are, you know, like when we use our lineup optimizer, if we move some pieces around, he falls out of the lineup. I don't think we'll be like, well, back to the drawing board. We have to get Harrison Barnes in there. But I do think he'll start showing up places just because the safety is there. You know, it's a very good matchup for him. You know, Portland actually, they range between just a little too small in terms of some of their wing defenders to then too big and slow in terms of their big guys to defend Barnes. And so I think he gets open. I think he takes a lot of shots here, and I think he pays.
Yeah, I think I'm a little higher on him than you. I really like the price on FanDuel, especially when we get into these situations where you have to roster two of these positions, like two small forwards or whatever. He gets, like, you don't need to do it maybe on DraftKings where the position eligibility leaves you a little more flexibility, though the fact that he qualifies for power forward on DraftKings is very helpful as a position that's difficult to fill. Wilson Chandler's in that same thing where he qualifies a power forward, and when you get a guy like him at a position that's tough to fill, so like FanDuel, you have the opposite problem. You have to do these two traditional power forwards in these spots, and that could be typically very difficult. On DraftKings, you have more flexibility. So I do like Barnes.
Well, that's the strength of Barnes. I mean, and I gave sort of a lukewarm response on him because I'm comparing him to, just in a vacuum, to the rest of the field and the rest of, or I'm sorry, in a vacuum to himself and just small forwards in general. If you look at the actual small forward list today and the fact that you have to play someone, I said I wasn't high on Butler. We talked about the issues with George's price rising. You know, Wiggins' price is up, slow matchup with Detroit, Gallo's out. That leaves Barnes as the next most expensive guy.
Right.
So, you know, maybe you play Crowder, but that's a blowout potential. Chandler, we talked about the question marks, Ariza, and now you're just off board. Now you're fully into, like, you know, backups and PJ Tucker and stuff like that. So there's just definitely not a lot of options at small forward tonight. You can play Aaron Gordon, who scored 12 points or less in two of his last three games. Like, you know, it's just a tricky situation. So for that reason, I do like him, but it's mostly by proxy of the fact that the rest of everyone else at this position is terrible. So that's my,
because you need to start two power forwards on FanDuel. I do kind of like Dirk here. They've actually played him at the five. They started him at center last game. I think they actually started him at center last two games, with Barnes at the four. Again, Portland is very bad defensively on the interior, and the problem with Dirk is he's just not playing a ton of minutes. Like, 28 minutes has been the max he's played over the last three games, and that is troublesome. So you're really hoping for a lot to go right. But 5,500, the price has come down a little bit on him, 5,500. And again, the matchup is so good, and filling that second power forward position is just, on a nightly basis on FanDuel, just very difficult. Because when you look down this list of sort of like guys that fall into this value play, guys in his similar, maybe even minutes range, like Taj. I mean, let me put it this way. Dirk at 5,500 against Portland, or Thaddeus Young against 5,500 against Brooklyn. Do you think people just, like, it's an easy call Thad there? Or do you think that you can talk yourself into Dirk over Thad?
Yeah, that's pretty close, I think. I mean, I think Thad is safer, if we're going to be completely honest. Like, I think the fact that Thad is probably going to play his minutes, has a phenomenal matchup. you know, just none of these other lingering injury concerns that might be there with Dirk. You know, the Pacers don't have nearly the incentive to rest him as the Mavs do with Dirk, you know, should the game get out of hand either way. I think I would lean Thad there in terms of overall safety. I will say with Dirk in the matchup here too, he's not really a conventional big man. And so the way a lot of teams punish the Trailblazers is just pounding them down low. And that's not really Dirk's game necessarily. Like, I mean, he's still going to be, he's not a good matchup for anyone necessarily when he's really clicking, but he's not going to take advantage of Portland's particular weaknesses, I don't think, in the same way that some do. So I know the system right now is saying Dirk, and I get it. I think that, yeah, I think that'll be a higher owned player almost.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I do think Wes Matthews is interesting. Seth Curry, his price has come up in the short term, though. He's still getting a decent amount of usage in that offense. So I think there's a lot of Dallas guys that I find interesting, and it really makes the 10:30 slate more enticing to play when you see some of the value concentrated just from one team. All right, that is it for us today. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Go there, /membership. Grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You are all set to go. We will be back next week talking more basketball. Buddy, enjoy a full Friday in the NBA.
Don't worry about it. I will.